Medram,
the genital.
Arvak,
the fools and rascals.
Dvaha,
a gate.
Yavaya,
performing sexual affairs.
Gramanam,
of common men.
Ratihi,
attraction.
Upastaha,
the faculty of procreation.
Durmadaha,
Durmada.
Prukta
is called.
Nirittihi,
Niritti.
Gudaha,
rectum.
Uchite
is called.
Translation,
the city called Ramaka, which is approached through the lower gate of Asari, the genital, is meant for sex, which is very pleasing to common men who are simply fools and rascals. The faculty of procreation is called Durmada, and the rectum is called Niriti. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When the world becomes degraded, civilization becomes demoniac. And for the common man, the rectum and the genital are taken very seriously as the centers of all activity. Even in such a sacred place as Vrindavan, India, unintelligent men pass off this rectal and genital business as spiritual activity. Such people are called Sahajiya. According to their philosophy, through sexual indulgence, one can elevate oneself to the spiritual platform. From these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, however, we understand that the desires for sexual satisfaction are meant for the arvak, the lowest among men. To rectify these rascals and fools is very difficult. After all, the sex desires of the common man are condemned in these verses. The word dhormada means wrongly directed, and nirriti means sinful activity. Although this clearly indicates that sex indulgence is abominable and misdirected, even from the ordinary point of view, the sahajas nevertheless, or nonetheless, pass themselves off as devotees conducting spiritual activities. For this reason, Vrindavan is no longer visited by intelligent men. Sometimes we are often asked why we have made our center in Vrindavan. From the external point of view, it can be concluded that Vrindavan has become degenerate due to these sahaja activities. Yet from the spiritual point of view, Vrindavan is the only place where all these sinful persons can be rectified by means of taking birth in the forms of dogs, hogs, and monkeys. By living in Vrindavan as a dog, hog, or monkey, the living entity can be elevated to the spiritual platform in the next life. So, Asuri Medram Arvagdwar Vyavayo Gramanam Mataki Upastodur Medho Prokto Nirittir Guda Uchate. So, Om Ganat Timananda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Militam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, when Prabhupada wrote this, also the devotees wrote something very similar in the Back to Godhead magazine about, you know, if someone doesn't follow the rules and regulations in Vrindavan, then they get to take birth as a dog, hog, or monkey in Vrindavan. And when the people in Vrindavan read this, they got very angry. And they went to complain to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, yes, it's a fact. So there's nothing they could do about it. So this is going on in Vrindavan. It's actually going on in Vrindavan and all the holy places, even more so now. When Prabhupada was on the planet, Prabhupada was very restrictive as far as how he allowed his disciples, the men and women, to interact, even the married couples. I mean, there's a story where Prabhupada came across a married couple on the roof of one of the buildings, and they were reading Bhagavatam with each other. It's not that they were holding hands or doing any other garbage. So, from a sannyasi's perspective. So it's not that they were doing anything else. I mean, they weren't even sitting close. And Prabhupada said, no, that shouldn't go on. Reading Bhagavatam, Hare Krishna. So it's not, Prabhupada didn't mean that householders shouldn't read Bhagavatam with each other. But like in public, it would create a bad impression in people's minds. Prabhupada was very, very concerned with impressions. This is actually in Mayapur. And in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was even stricter with the householders. Like if they, of course, there were householders there, but if they wanted to engage in the act of procreation, even according to the rules and regulations, he told them to go to Delhi. Can you imagine how strict Prabhupada was with this in the holy places? Because Prabhupada understood the tendency for people to take the wrong example, for people to criticize this kind of, Prabhupada wanted to establish the highest standard for people to see. So very, very strict. And Prabhupada, incidentally, didn't even want grihasthas residing in Vrindavan. Mayapur is a different thing. Because Mayapur is Odariya Dham. And Vrindavan is Madhuriya Dham. Does anyone know what that means? Madhuriya means sweet. But in Vrindavan, everything is very strict. Radharani is in control. And if you step out of line, it's all over for you. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends when you go to Vrindavan, you spend a fortnight at most. Fortnight means 2 weeks. Because if you spend any longer than that, you just tend to engage in your ordinary activities, you know, just do all sorts of nonsense. And not only this illicit life, but you commit offenses against Vaishnavas, or you may engage in playing video games or something like that. Of course, in those days, there weren't video games. So, therefore, 2 weeks should be the utmost. So Prabhupada didn't want grihasthas residing in Vrindavan, which is interesting. And then, of course, Mayapur is different because that's Odariya Dham. That means the very merciful abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is more merciful than Krishna. Of course, we have this prayer in the Namo Mahapada Nyaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurita Seda Maha. Lord Chaitanya, you're the most munificent personality of God in it because you're giving out Krishna consciousness freely. And also, we chant the Panchatattva Mahamantra before we chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and there's no offenses in the chanting of the Panchatattva Mahamantra. That doesn't mean you should say, I'm chanting the Panchatattva Mantra, I'm going to do all sorts of nonsense, there's no offenses. Because if you deliberately try to commit an offense, you will be committing an offense. But still, Lord Chaitanya is very merciful. So he was very strict about this principle about man and women associating. And even, you know, Prabhupada, when he was first preaching, you know, he came across men and women, some of his disciples who were living together, and Prabhupada just had them get married like that. Of course, in America, that's called a shotgun marriage. A shotgun marriage is when, basically, when you discover some man associating with your daughter and you take your shotgun out, that means a gun, not a pistol, you know, long gun like that, and you point it at the man and say, you're getting married tomorrow. That's how it used to be in America, because things used to be strict. Even in America, it used to be strict 100 years ago. You know, you caught someone associating with your daughter, you may even kill it. And you know, marriages were arranged and all that other nice stuff. So Prabhupada would actually tell people, oh, you're getting married. And then people say, what's the need to get married? And Prabhupada said, basically, it's illicit. You know, you should get married so you can actually sort of dovetail your relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead's service. And so Prabhupada considered that very important. Of course, nowadays, as I was speaking yesterday, you know, people say, well, I'd like you to meet my partner. That's a common expression for, you know, I'd like you to meet my illicit life. So instead of saying, you know, getting married or fiancé or anything like that, it's always partner. That means they're living with the person. And then sometimes even people ask, you know, we had this discussion the other day, can so-and-so take Brahman initiation and do deity worship? Because they were living with someone of the opposite sex. And I said, why should that question even be asked? I mean, it should be obvious, no, because they're not keeping the principles. Anyway, so people are just very much more and more becoming, attached to this illicit sex life. And according to the Bhagavatam, because we have the four principles of religiosity, cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. And in Kali Yuga, there's no cleanliness, and that lack of cleanliness is due, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, to illicit sex life. Of course, there are other factors, too. I mean, I understand that people are not clean in general, but the attachment to illicit sex life and the performance of illicit sex life increases the uncleanliness. And Prabhupada said that uncleanliness, is interesting, is one of the main causes of disease. Prabhupada gave the different causes of disease. He said uncleanliness, anxiety, and does anyone remember the other one? Overeating, the three of them. So, you know, if you see someone sick, I mean, just like the devotees would go with Prabhupada to India. We're not talking about illicit sex right now, but let's say they go to Prabhupada, with Prabhupada to India, and they would get sick, and Prabhupada said, this is because you're eating improperly. You should just eat like I do. So Prabhupada would go, and even when he visited people's homes and he ate dinner or something in someone's home, he would just eat very little. He would just take a little bite. I've watched Prabhupada eat. He would take a bite out of a sweet ball, but we throw the sweet balls in our mouths like it's going out of style. And we even devotees have competitions sometimes. Who can eat the most sweet balls? Do you ever do that here? No. Yeah. Who can eat the most gulab jamuns? And then the next morning, they wake up with a stomach ache or diarrhea or whatever. And they say, well, I'm sick. Well, you caused it, you rascal. So uncleanliness is coming to a large extent from illicit sex life. And of course, there are diseases that in Kali Yuga that directly come from illicit sex life, you know, like the venereal diseases and, of course, AIDS to a large extent. Of course, AIDS also can come from someone sharing needles, which is another breaking of the principles. You know, when you take drugs, you use needles, you know, heroin or something like that, and then you don't get a chance to get new needles. Nowadays, the governments actually have these programs to give out needles. It's interesting. Instead of stopping the activity through training people up in Krishna consciousness, they just facilitate it by giving out needles. Or they facilitate illicit sex by giving out contraceptives. You know, there was this proposal, at least in America, I don't know what goes on here. But in America, there was a proposal, you know, that we should teach the kids about abstinence. Abstinence means, you know, you don't do it. Just say no, as they say. And the conclusion was, it's impractical. You can't teach the children about that. You have to let them express themselves, you know, be natural and everything like that. So therefore, the school, you know, when you go to school, they hand out contraceptives to the kids. Do they do that here? No.
Yes,
they actually do that here too. You know, so it's crazy. It's crazy, and of course, when I used to go out and preach to the college campuses, I had a funny little sign I would go out with, and I would say, "Hare Krishna's find the cure to AIDS." You know, big sign like that, and people would come up, "Wow, Hare Krishna's find the cure to AIDS." And then little letters that would say abstinence. And it would say abstinence makes the heart grow fonder and live longer. And they go, you Hare Krishnas. You don't understand life. So this is a major factor. And in modern society, they're selling everything based on illicit sex. I mean, if you want to buy toothpaste, there's some lady, naked lady, advertising the toothpaste. Yeah, because you use the toothpaste, you smile, and all the ladies will love you. Like that. Or the men will love you, you know, if you have a big smile, a nice smile. And they have all these dental clinics you have to go to, you know, to whiten your teeth, to give you new teeth, to file down your teeth so they look like, anyway, whatever. So everything, you know, they sell everything based on it, even computers. You can't buy a computer without being exposed to a naked lady nowadays. I mean, it's just like, huh? What's happening? And you go into the supermarket and there's all these, like, what's called tabloids. You know, I'm talking about tabloids that talk about illicit life and everything. And you just basically can't escape it. Like Prabhupada talked about Ajamil, how Ajamil saw one couple, a Shudra, you know, a prostitute or a Shudrani, embracing. And Prabhupada said, it's all over the place now. So what are we going to do about it? I mean, we should just go to the forest. Of course, there's a problem in the forest. The animals are also embracing each other. Just like Shobhari Muni. He was meditating under the water. Of course, he had also committed an offense against Garuda. But he was meditating on the water. He was minding his business when he saw two fish engaged and they got married. So I don't know if they actually got married, but they had little fish babies. You know, can you imagine that? And then, you know, his mind got agitated just seeing that. And instead of continuing his meditation, he jumped out of the water, dove out of the water, as the case may be, went to the king, his king's name was Mandata, I think, and said to the king, I'd like to marry your daughter. You know, he was just minding his business and just saw two fish engage in loving exchanges. Whatever that means with fish. I mean, we used to have fish and I never saw them engage in loving exchanges. But, and then the king took a look at this sage, and the sage was actually, well, you know how it is if you go and you stay in the water for like several days, your skin gets all wrinkly and everything like that. You don't look so, and you have seaweed all over you. He was meditating in the Jamuna. He was actually a fish bhakta. Because he had protected the fish from Garuda. You know, Garuda would come and eat the fish, and he cursed Garuda that if you come again, you're going to die. So Garuda respected that. Of course, Garuda wasn't subjected to the curses of some sage. So he committed offense against Garuda. That's another reason why his material desires increased like that. So he went to the king and he said, my dear king, I'd like to marry one of your daughters. And the king took a look at this sage and he said, phew, he is ugly. You know, I can't do that to any of my daughters. And he didn't want to say no, because you say no to a sage, you get cursed and all that other stuff. So he said, all right, any of my daughters who wants to marry you can marry you. So he goes into the woman's ashram. But he also uses his mystic power to make himself very handsome. He understands the king's playing a trick on him. So he just like transforms his wrinkly body from being in the water to something extremely handsome, like, you know, like Rambo or something. The Terminator or something. Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's from Austria, actually, right near here. So the girls look at him and they all fight over him. They say, no, I want him. I said, don't worry, girls, I'll marry you. There were 50 of them. So he goes and he gets married to 50 girls at once. Then after a while, you know, a few years of suffering, getting nagged by 50 girls, 50 wives. Anyway, then he realizes, wow, what happened to me? I committed an offense. And then he renounces, and the women also become great devotees, and they all go back to God. It's a nice story, isn't it? The happy ending to the story. So the point is, you cannot avoid this sort of desire simply by going to live in the forest. There's another story, too. When Prabhupada was on the planet, the devotees in New York, they wanted to really separate the women from the brahmacharis. So they wouldn't let the women chant japa in the temple room. I mean, it was really, they're really fanatic. And so there was a sign. I remember going to the New York temple, you know, no women allowed in the temple during japa time. And at that time, there was no other room for the women to go in. They just had to go outside in Brooklyn in the middle of the winter, which is colder than here, you know. So you imagine like having a sign here in this temple, like no ladies allowed in the temple room in the morning. Mangalarti, they can go to this one. But and so they were actually on the streets just chanting japa during the japa period. And Prabhupada heard about this. And he said, this is ridiculous. You're inventing something new that the acharyas have not even recommended. And he said, if the brahmacharis are so agitated, let them go to the forest. And he said, because they're going out in Sankirtan anyway and meeting so many women in the street. It's not that you go out on Sankirtan and you only preach to the men. Imagine that, you know, you approach a couple, and you know, a man and a woman, and you don't look at the woman and go, yes, sir. You know, keep one eye closed. Yeah? No, I mean, you gotta be nice to the lady also. Yeah, I mean, what can you do? You know, you can't avoid this. And Prabhupada said, let them go to the forest, because they're approaching so many women in the street. And Prabhupada said, then what's the good? If they go to the forest, there's no preaching. So Prabhupada wanted preaching. So anyway, so Prabhupada didn't recommend like complete absolute separation. I mean, even in India nowadays, the brahmacharis won't allow the women to do deity worship, basically, in most of the temples. And of course Prabhupada didn't have that standard. When Prabhupada was preaching in India in pandals, where pandal means a big tent, where there were like 30, 40, 50,000 people coming every night, Prabhupada sometimes had the ladies lecture, ladies do deity worship, right in front of 30, 40,000 people. And nowadays, the devotees say, well, the Indian people will never accept it. It doesn't even make a sense, because nowadays the Indian people are more liberal than they were 30 or 50 years ago. And plus, you know, their most popular guru is a hugging lady. Whenever she comes to town, like several thousand Indians line up paying so much money each to get a hug. I mean, maybe we should do that to raise money for the new temple here. To renovate. find one of the ladies to do, you know, older ladies, you know, motherly, to be a hug, you know, just advertise her, a hugging lady, you know, you get spiritual shakti by hugging her. And even one of my disciples previously did that, the lady, she got hugged by the lady. And I asked her about it, I said, you know, what was it like? She said, it was ecstasy. So, anyway, getting back to the point, is that we should follow Prabhupada's standard. So the point is how to get free from the desires that are naturally there when one has a material body. Some devotees have recommended material means. There was actually one devotee, who's no longer with us, who published a book, The Joy of No Sex. You know, really interesting. And of course, you know, as I've taught many times before, that when you say no to something, you want to do it more. You know, it becomes the forbidden fruit. Like the, you know, Adam and Eve ate the apple in the Garden of Eden. Just like yesterday, you know, we're talking to one devotee, one of my disciples, and I said, I don't want you reading this book. You know, it's a particular book that was, somehow it wasn't a good book. It's against, it wasn't a good translation, and it's against Prabhupada, you know, all those things. And he said, well, the book becomes more attractive to me. How can I not read it? Because you told me not to read it. I want to read it. That's natural psychology. And I was also talking to some parents yesterday, how to discipline the children. And, you know, they're into like, don't do this, don't do that. And they ask me, why does a child want to do something more when they're told not to do it? Because it's more fun. Like I gave the example when I was young, my mother said, don't go in this room because we have our antique furniture in this room. So I just waited till she left the house. And I went on the antique furniture and used it as a trampoline, you know. So not only did I go in the room, but I went on the furniture and started jumping up and down. Jai, hoodie bowl! Not only me, my brother, both of us did it. And it was more fun because it was forbidden. So, you know, you can't just publish books like The Joys of Those. And then in this book it said different recommendations how to overcome sex desire. One was, you know, you put ice cubes around you at night. Of course, here in Slovenia, we don't have to do that. I mean, now it's warm. But like 3 days ago, I mean, that nobody could experience material desires. I mean, it would have been possible. I mean, you didn't want to eat, you didn't want to do anything, so to survive. Now it's better. That's better. Material desires are coming back. So you imagine, you know, before you go to sleep, put yourself in a bath of ice cubes or something. So these things don't work. Because the desire is in the heart. And even, you know, even this Prabhupada told that story about the guy at old age. The king was asked by the king asked the sage, do these desires ever go away? And the sage said, no. The king said, I don't believe you. And the sage said, well, I'll prove it to you. Let's go to this hospice. You know what a hospice is? Where someone's getting ready to die. So let's go to this hospice and visit this gentleman. But bring your daughter along with you, the princess. And she was a quite attractive princess. Okay, so the king, the sage, and the princess went to see this old man who was like 200 years old. Could hardly open his eyes. This is right when you get real old, you got to have someone open your eyes for you. That's true. I mean, the eyelids, it's true. You got it. So, you know, he was just very much decrepit. So they walk into the room, and the guy's getting ready to die. You know, you think if you're getting ready to die, and a sage walks in the room, you say to the sage, please give me your blessing so, you know, I can have a better birth or something. But immediately the guy looks at the girl. Somehow someone opened his eyes for him. But anyway, so he looks at the girl and goes, wow. And he doesn't see the king or the sage. And so the desire remains in the heart. So it's not a physical condition. Of course, certain things, yes, can increase the desires. Like if you eat too many sweets, you're going to want a sweetheart. That's why. Because it increases the desire. Sweets or opulent food like that. Or, of course, we know from the Upadeshamrita, Achahara Payasa Chapa Japa Nimagra. What is that? No, that's not the verse I was looking for. What is the first verse? Vajo Vegam, Manasakurata Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Pashta Vegam. Yeah, so we know that also works too. So one has to be careful of what they eat. That's why when Raghunath Das Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Swarup Damodar Goswami, what is the duty of those in the renounced order of life? One of the first things he was told was, don't eat opulent food. And Prabhupada actually said, one sense, that the Mahaprasadam is for the grahasthas. Wow, that may shock you, brahmacharis. You can take a little bit, but not that Mahaprasadam means you fill your plate with sweet rice and halva. And that. You can eat the spinach Mahaprasadam. So, anyway, so there are certain material things you can do like that to avoid stimulating yourself too much, you know, if you overeat, etc. So, but the main reason, the main way Prabhupada said you can conquer over this lust, Prabhupada actually, in this one letter, he called it Mr. Lust. He gave it a personality. And it is, it's Cupid. Cupid is actually a real person. And his bow and arrows attack you with the form, taste, smell, and touch, you know, the five objects of the senses. And he's Ananga. He doesn't have a gross body because he got burnt up by Lord Shiva. He tried to attack Lord Shiva. So you can't see him coming. That's the problem. I mean, if you could see him coming, if there was a warning, like a siren that go off or something like that. Beep, 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 beep. Cupid's coming, Cupid's coming. Okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. That would be good. But, you know, you don't get any warning. All of a sudden, boom! You're in Maya. Anyway, so Prabhupada said the way to overcome this Mr. Lust is basically by deity worship. You know, look at the form of the Lord. If you'd all, as Rupa Goswami says, if you at all desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't go to see Krishna who's standing on the banks of the Kesha Ghat playing his flute. That's a sarcastic injunction. Because then you become attracted to Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and say, oh, Lord Chaitanya, you're so attractive. Everybody else looks like a frog compared to you. Of course, sometimes you have to lie, you know. When someone says, how do I look? You can't say, you look like a frog. That would be an insult. But, you know, you have to be a little couth. You have to observe some etiquette. So anyway, you worship the form of the Lord because we're attracted to forms in this world. Man's attracted to woman, woman's attracted to man. The forms like that. And so if we have a transcendental form, Prabhupada said that's the methodology for overcoming the Mr. Lust. Hmm. And of course, chanting Hare Krishna, but Prabhupada said specifically the worship of the deities. But one has to be very, very alert because material desires come thinking, feeling, willing, so one has to cut it off at the thinking stage. And then one will be safe from Mr. Lust and one won't have to take birth as a dog, hog, or a monkey. Nowadays in Vrindavan, there's so many dogs, hogs, and monkeys. Sometimes I'm going around Vrindavan and I address, Prabhupada said, if someone is a, not right here, but another place, he said, if a sannyasi falls down and in Vrindavan, then he has to take birth as a monkey in his next life. So sometimes I'm going around Vrindavan and I address the monkeys as Maharaj. And they reciprocate. I said, Maharaj, please leave me alone. Don't steal my prasadam. So, because that's what they were in their last lives. And so it's, anyway. So in Vrindavan you'll find this, and also there's the subtle sex desire, where people get into the sahaja thing. There's many sentimental, even Western devotees who go to Radhakund, and they're enjoying in a subtle way. In other words, they're hearing pastimes of Radha and Krishna from people who shouldn't be telling them pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and they're not ready to hear about these intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So they're enjoying sex. It's called the sublimated way. You understand? It's also gross. There's different types of gross, of course, but subtle is actually much more difficult to detect. Subtle, of course, is profit, adoration, distinction, but also sublimated or vicarious. That's another word I was looking for. Vicarious enjoyment means you see someone else doing some enjoyment or hear someone else doing some enjoyment and you enjoy it through that activity. I mean, for example, people go to see Bollywood movies in India or love stories in the West and they look at that because, you know, they don't have anyone who loves them. So so they watch the movie. I mean, my mother, I remember many years ago, my mother went to see this one sort of called Love Story. I've never seen that. I don't even know what it was about. And she was crying through the whole movie. And it's just like, because you enter into the movie. Just like, yeah, any of these movies is like that. I mean, I remember going to see Star Wars, and that wasn't a love story. Star Wars? Anyone's heard of Star Wars before? But you start, you know, when they're piloting the planes, and the planes are going, not the planes, the rocket ships, they're going, you're enjoying that as if you were flying through the air. Has anyone experienced that? Has anyone seen that movie? Star Wars. And then you enjoy it. So that's called vicarious enjoyment, where someone else is doing something, but you're enjoying through them, through their doing, or through your illusion of identifying yourself with them. So if one hears about Radha and Krishna, and they're not in the intimate affairs of Radha and Krishna, and they're not on the right platform, they're actually enjoying sex life, projecting their mentality on Radha and Krishna. You know, it's just the same thing as gross sex life. I mean, I wouldn't say it's breaking the principles, but it does exactly the same thing to the psychology, and it's not spiritual at all. Of course, Prabhupada said if one hears about the loving exchange of Radha and Krishna, you get purified, but one has to hear from someone like Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada wrote in the Krishna book, and he gave us the purports at the same time to keep us from going to the improper understanding when we're reading Srila Prabhupada's purports. But in Vrindavan, it's like that. There's so many people thinking, you know, Radhe, 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 Radhe. And they're not really qualified to be chanting like that. And they're just enjoying some mundane rasa. I mean, just like this whole thing, you know, should Radharani's feet be shown or whatever. And devotees, I mean, sometimes I tried not to have her feet shown on Radharani. I almost got killed by the devotees. But it's such an intimate thing. I mean, Radharani, what do they say? Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. I mean, who are we to understand Radharani? I mean, or devotees just like dive into the Radhakund and just have a swimming contest in Radhakund. Prabhupada stopped it. Prabhupada said it's like kicking Radharani. So one has to approach these things with great reverence. Just like we say, even the spiritual master, Vandan Vui Savadavan Mate. So, anyway, so this Sahaja thing is very dangerous. Prabhupada said it would stop the preaching in the Krishna conscious movement. And practically, I've never seen Prabhupada more angry than when he was dealing with Sahajas in Los Angeles, not even Vrindavan, in Los Angeles. It was the whole Gopi Baba Club that was reading sections of Prabhupada's books, not even books of the Goswamis. But sections of Prabhupada's books, just taking them out of context and reading about Radha and Krishna and chanting every night Shri Rupa Manjari Pada, which is a bona fide song. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur loved that song. But Prabhupada got very angry. His face was, you know, turning red. Right? He thought he was going to have a heart attack. And he said, they're not getting purified, they're getting putrefied. So one has to be very, very careful about this vicarious enjoyment, that one will project his own mentality upon the affairs of Radha and Krishna, the Sahaja. And some of the Sahajas even get worse. You know, they have men dressed up as women. I mean, I've seen in Vrindavan some pretty ugly women because they have a beard. So, you know, men will put lipstick on, you know. I mean, at least in the West when they do cross-dressing, it's kind of nice, but it's not nice, but it looks a little better. But with the Sahajas in Vrindavan, they definitely don't look like gopis. And so if people go that far, or they have like rasa dancers or girlfriends to teach themselves about Parakiya Bhav, I mean, it gets really crazy. And even there's that story with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where there's the discussion about who would have the samadhi of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And Bhaktisiddhanta, there was a whole fight because they all wanted the samadhi, because if the samadhi of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was in their ashram, they'd attract more tourists at Gaura Purnima time. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, all right, so anyone who has not had illicit connection in the last month can take this body, but if they've had connection, then they'll go to hell. So nobody stepped forward. And then he said like something like, the last 2 weeks, nobody stepped forward. The last few days, nobody stepped forward. And these were all Babaji's. So you can understand what was going on by this particular pastime. One has to be extremely careful when they go to Vrindavan and stay with the ISKCON devotees and stay on a proper parikrama. Prabhupada actually said the devotees should not go out like alone on a parikrama. They should actually have the guidance. You know, there should be... And Prabhupada also said all the all the different holy places are contained within the Krishna Balaram Mandir. I mean, there's another statement Prabhupada made. Of course, we take devotees on parikrama, but, you know, it's a guided parikrama. We don't sit and take shelter in the Babaji's while we're doing this. So one has to be very careful in Vrindavan, because it can be the most degraded things happen there and the most elevated. Why is this, what's being described here in this verse, very degraded, you know, illicit sex life? Because it's a perverted reflection of the most elevated thing in the spiritual world, which is the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna. So whatever is highest there is lowest here. That's just life. You know, because it's a reflection, a mirror reflection. So any questions or comments? It's late already. Yes?
If I remember correctly, Sri Prabhupada in purple, at the end of the purport says that animals from Vrindavan have a chance to go to spiritual planet.
Yes.
But we all often hear that they are going back to, like spiritual world, and it's the
yes.
difference between chance for spiritual elevation and going directly to the spiritual world.
Yeah. Well, Prabhupada said, you know, one life is a monkey. I mean, I guess that's a shortcut. You just go to Vrindavan and have illicit life, and then.
No, I mean that yeah. doesn't mean that they are going back. To
well, Prabhupada did. Well, another time, Prabhupada did say that.
Another time,
Prabhupada did say that, that they have, you know, one life is a dog or a hog or a monkey, and then they get free from their offenses because they die in Vrindavan.
But they cannot go to Goloka.
Prabhupada said the spiritual world, so. So, if you die in Vrindavan, you know.
But if you haven't got Krishna Prema, what would you
well, Krishna arranges. So that's a method you can all take up, you know. Next birth, hog, dog, monkey, cockroach in Vrindavan. But there's every chance that you'll leave Vrindavan, even as a monkey. There's an interesting story. There was one devotee I know. And he was living his whole life in Vrindavan. He was actually doing some criminal activities. So he thought, as long as I stay in Vrindavan, I'll go back to Godhead. So what happened is someone shot him. And they were taking him to the hospital in Delhi. So right after he left Mathura Mandala, he passed away. So there's no guarantee as a monkey you're going to stay in Vrindavan. I mean, you could just travel. So, Prabhupada said different things at different times, but one thing he did say: one life is a monkey. And also, as far as going back to God, generally in the next life, if we become perfect in this life, we take birth wherever Krishna's pastimes are taking place in some material universe. Get trained up, and then we actually go back to the Param Dhamma. Krishna is very merciful. Krishna is very merciful. But don't take advantage. Anyway, I don't want to become a dog or a hog or a monkey. It's not nice. They don't live nice. You know, they fight with each other. They bite each other's legs off. It's a very abominable life. The pigs in Vrindavan. Of course, at least they perform the service of cleaning up the garbage. So, that's their seva. And you know, in Krishna's pastime, in the spiritual world, there's monkeys too. But those monkeys are nice monkeys. So, and of course, one should not offend the monkeys in Vrindavan either. Even the monkeys who became monkeys because they did something bad in their last lives, they should not be offended. Because they're devotees. So any other questions or comments? Yeah. Let someone else have the opportunity. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. What is the proper way of listening to these pastimes? And how do we know that we are not trying to enjoy it?
Proper ways we should be hearing from the great devotees like Srila Prabhupada about these pastimes. And you know, hearing the purports of the previous acharyas and everything like Prabhupada, when he wrote the Krishna book, or the devotees compiled the 10th canto after Prabhupada left the planet, they compiled the purports of all the great acharyas so that we wouldn't get confused. Like Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, Baladeva Vijayabhushan, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Like Prabhupada, that's what Prabhupada did. And that protects us if you read these purports. But if you just read the stories, there's every chance of being misled. So, in other words, we hear the association of devotees who understand the dangers and can protect us from these things. Does that make sense? Otherwise, if we just like go to the books of the acharyas, even the books of bona fide, we can get misled, or our mind can mislead us. Prabhupada gave the example that all the medicine is good, but some medicine may not be good for you right now. The Prabhupada compared the Vedic literatures, and indeed even his books, to a pharmacopoeia, in other words, a pharmacy or a drugstore. And he said, you have to have the medicine properly prescribed according to your condition. And if you get the wrong medicine, I mean, many times in the hospital, this happens quite often, that the doctor will prescribe some medicine and the pharmacy in the hospital won't read the prescription properly, and they'll send something else up and it'll kill you. It's quite common, actually. In America, something like over 100,000 people die each year in the hospital due to misprescribed medicine or improper operations, because people do make mistakes. Even nowadays, let's say if you're supposed to have something cut out of a leg or part of your body, you take a marker and mark it so he knows which leg to cut off. Because doctors are not perfect entities. So anyway, so the point is, if you take the wrong medicine, it could kill you, even though the medicine has some bona fide use. So the same thing with Krishna Katha. You take the wrong Krishna Katha that you're not ready for, you don't have the adhikar for, your spiritual life can be finished. You'll just be enjoying illicit sex in a vicarious or subtle way. One has to be very, very careful about these things. I mean, I was watching Prabhupada. How strict Prabhupada was with this. I was seeing a video of Prabhupada. Some ladies did a dancing performance for Prabhupada. You know, Bhartanatyam or something. And Prabhupada, he was just looking down. He wasn't looking at the ladies dancing. You know, of course, Prabhupada has no material desires on the spiritual platform, whatever. But he wasn't just like looking at the ladies dancing. You know, and Bhartanatyam is nice. You know, they're dancing Krishna's pastimes. But for a sannyasi to see ladies dancing is not proper. I mean, just like when we had the Radha Yatra this year in Novi Sad, they had ladies dancing. Even some of my disciples were dancing. And I didn't watch them. Not that I get attracted, but it doesn't set a good example. Like that. So one has to be extremely careful about these things. You know, not that in the name of Bhartanatyam you watch a bunch of ladies dancing. It's just that, you know, there has to be some intelligence applied. Oh, it's a Bhartanatyam dance about Krishna. And the ladies go, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. Isn't it? I mean, I watched Prabhupada. He wasn't watching. I mean, it's in the film. I wasn't there at the time. But I have this very nice series, the Prabhupada Memory Series. It's 7 DVDs, long DVDs about Prabhupada. With devotees, and you really learn a lot by hearing the devotees and watching Prabhupada, how he interacted in every situation. So one has to be very careful. Jayato vishakunsa sangustesha bhajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha bhajayate. Everyone knows that verse? Jayato vishakunsa. When you contemplate sense objects, you get attached to them. And from getting attached, then lust develops. And then from lust you get this nice anger. Kama krodha vijayate, krodha bhavati samoha. You get bewildered. Samoha smriti vibramaha. You forget everything. Smriti brahmashad nashtabhuti. You lose your brain and intelligence. Nashtabhuti vinashyati. Anyone know that verse? I'm sure Gargamuni has a verse. But it's an important verse. When you contemplate sense, any sense object. I mean, it's like, I've changed my diet. You know, I eat very simple things. I used to be addicted to pizza. You know, just like a drug addiction. So if someone comes by with a pizza, I don't start contemplating it. I don't say, oh, it's nice. Look at that cheese. Look at the olives. Look at the tomato sauce. You know, I know when I see a pizza, just to go, Hare Krishna, Hare. No, I don't have to. I don't have to do that. I mean, I'm really not attracted to it anymore. But I'm just making a funny example how one has to deal with potential sense objects. You just don't meditate on them. So the men and the women also have to be careful. Not that the women should look pictures of handsome men with muscles like that. You know, you go in the ladies' ashram and there's pictures of eligible brahmacharis on the wall. It's like, Usha and Aniruddha story. You know that Usha and Aniruddha story? Usha was Vanasura's daughter, and she was having dreams of a young man. And so she had a friend named Chitraleka, who brought her all the pictures of all the eligible men in the universe to see which man it was. That story's in the Krishna book. I'm not making the story up. And so, you know, anyway, contemplating sense objects, you get attached to it. It's like anything. Like even if you look at if you're into cars, if you look at a car like a new Lamborghini or whatever, Mercedes, whatever nice cars you have here, you know, Italian sports cars. Ferrari. He said that with love, you know. Even it wasn't just Ferrari, it was Ferrari. So, so you look at that and you get attached to it after a while. And then attachment, you get lust. You know, and so the same thing happens. So one has to be careful what they contemplate. Because you can get attached to almost any damn thing. Any damn thing. If you do it enough, you get attached to it. Like you see that people from certain parts of the world, they're attached to eating so many abominable foods. I mean, like, anyway, people from China or Japan, if you ever gone to a Chinese or Japan shop, you know, you go through Chinatown, you see, you have a Chinatown here? No, probably not. But in other countries, you just see these raw seafood just hanging there, like it looks so gross, like an octopus. You know what an octopus is? You know, it's like many-handed, eight-handed octa. Eight-handed sea creature. And it's just hanging there. And you go in and it smells so bad. Or like in Korea, they eat liquid dog. They take all the dead bodies of all the creatures that die and put them into a vat. And they make a drink out of it. It ferments for a whole year and then they put it in bottles and sell it. And because they do it enough, you could like it. They begin to like it. I mean, you could like it too. If you do it enough, you actually get attached to it. Or, you know, nowadays they're advocating eating bugs. Because they have a lot of protein. So yeah, I'm sure here in Slovenia you can buy chocolate-covered ants. Yeah, I'm sure. Any country they have it. Now it's becoming more popular. Chocolate-covered ants, you know. So people get attached to things. I mean, even chocolate. People get addicted to chocolate. I've had people say, I can't join your Krishna conscious movement because you won't let me eat chocolate. In other words, they stay in the material world. Anyway, I'm not saying chocolate's forbidden. I'm not trying to offend anybody. But you get attached. You can get attached to anything by contemplating it enough. So just be careful. So on that happy note, it's time for prasadam. All praise to the divine grace, to the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada.